Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Understanding Service Integration Bus JMS Messaging in WebSphere Liberty. The presenters are Geeta Nadala and Ty Schreck. Geeta has over 10 years of experience in Level 2 technical support. Areas of specializations include WebSphere MQ, WebSphere Application Server Service Integration Bus, J2C, Transactions, WLM, and HA Manager. Ty has been working for IBM for over 21 years and has worked on Service Integration Bus since its release. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Ty.
Thank you, Kathy, and good morning, everybody. Kathy, if we could move to slide number 2, please. Thank you. Here's our agenda for today, folks. First, we're going to talk about the Liberty Messaging architecture. Then we're going to do a quick overview of Liberty Messaging itself. Then we're going to take a pretty detailed look at Liberty Messaging features, and this is really where the real core of Liberty is exposed. Then we're going to look at application deployment, primarily MDBs, and then message handling, monitoring, and troubleshooting. And Kathy, if we can go to slide 3, please. Okay, this is the basic Liberty Messaging architecture. Everything you see here in blue is the basic architecture that you need for messaging itself. All of these services are available through the WAS JMS Server 1.0 feature, which we're going to talk about more here in a minute. The services shown in blue are the core services that are required for the messaging engine to get started and are enabled when the WAS JMS Server 1.0 feature is enabled. So for those of you that are familiar with WebSphere ND or the larger full-blown WebSphere product, Liberty uses messaging engines just like WebSphere does, although this is very much a more lightweight service. It's not intended for heavy-duty JMS messaging. And these features in blue are the core of the messaging and messaging engine services. And you'll notice the persistence store is a file store, always with Liberty. And the rest of the services in yellow are available only when required features are enabled. So those aren't turned on automatically. You have to do some things to get those going. The comm service is just a communications service for the messaging engine. Security is available through a feature, WAS JMS Security 1.0 feature, which we're going to talk about in more detail here in a few minutes. The transaction feature is pretty robust. Liberty provides many of the same transaction services that are provided in the WebSphere application server traditional environment, which many of you are probably familiar with. If an application uses two or more resources, the Liberty Transaction Manager coordinates the updates to all the resource managers under the control of a global transaction. And in Liberty, transaction services are implicitly activated when you specify features that require the use of transactions, for example, JPA, JDBC, and, of course, the WAS JMS Server 1.0 service that we're looking here. Below that, kind of in the lower right-hand corner, you also see the resource adapter service and the JMS resource service. The resource adapter service is used to connect to MQ and other third-party JMS providers. And the JMS resource service is used to connect to the messaging engine in Liberty or WAS, like WAS ND, for example. And these are available through the WAS JMS Client 1.1 or WAS JMS Client 2.0 feature, which, again, anytime you hear me kind of rattle off these features, we're going to talk about them in more detail here in a moment. So if we can, let's move on to slide 4, please, Kathy. Thank you. Okay, overview of Liberty Messaging. First and foremost, it provides lightweight, it's a lightweight JMS server. It's really good for testing and lightweight messaging applications. If you're processing 5 million messages a day, this probably is not the best choice. You probably want to go with the full WebSphere product. It's composable, it's flexible, and it's a dynamic messaging service. It's both JMS 1.1 and JMS 2.0 compliant, as long as you're at version 8.5.5.6 or above that. It supports both point-to-point and publish-subscribe messaging models. And supported messaging providers are the Liberty Embedded JMS Server, which is the messaging engine inside Liberty itself, Service Integration Bus messaging provider, which most of you are probably familiar with, which is the regular full-blown WAS provider, and the WebSphere and Q messaging provider. It also supports message-driven Beam deployment, and its interoperability with full has interoperability with full-profile WebSphere application server. So just a quick comment on some of this stuff. By composable and flexible, what we mean there is that required features can be added and removed as you need them. Okay, so in that sense, Liberty is kind of very modular. You can turn things on and off and plug things in and unplug them very easily. It's dynamic because adding features and updating the configuration does not require server restart, and the updates are picked up on the fly. So there's no need to restart the Liberty server when you're adding or removing features, which is very convenient. And so one last thing, going back to this lightweight JMS server business, when I say lightweight, the entire footprint of Liberty server is only about 50 megabytes with a simple JMS application running. So compared to WAS, that's very, very small. So the memory requirements, heap space and so on for Liberty are far smaller than WebSphere. And I'll give you an example. In WebSphere, if you create a server that's intended to run a messaging engine, the default heap size is 768 megabytes, which is far larger than this. So you can see how much smaller and much more lightweight this is. So for testing purposes, this is a really, really good thing. Okay, let's move on to slide 5, please. Okay, all JMS messaging configuration is performed either in the Liberty Admin Center or by directly editing the server.xml file. This includes the configuration of queues for point-to-point and topics for published subscriber messaging, as well as messaging engine configuration and connections to other JMS providers, such as WebSphere and Q. MDB deployment parameters are also found here. There's also a lot of other stuff inside the server.xml file. If you've ever looked at one, you can really put a lot of stuff in there. If you configure your system and encounter problems or unexpected behavior, the solution is almost always an incorrectly configured part of server.xml. And Kathy, if we can move on to slide 6, please. Okay, supported JMS providers in Liberty. Of course, you can connect your applications directly to Liberty Server, in other words, the messaging engine running inside of Liberty. And as this diagram shows, you can also connect it to WebSphere MQ and Service Integration Bus. What this diagram does not show is that you can actually connect to third-party JMS providers, okay? For example, maybe ActiveMQ or JBoss or something like that. But you, of course, have to have the resource adapter to do that. There is a page in the Liberty Information Center that describes how to do this, but it's a little difficult to find. So I think what we're going to do is Keita and I will probably create a DW Answers article that explains where that page is in the Info Center and give some guidance on how to get that done. So if you can connect to a third-party JMS provider with Liberty, I don't know of any customers that have done so. There might be one or two, but it is possible, just to let you know. And we'll write an article to provide the information about that, the details. So if we can move to slide 7, please. Okay, I mentioned earlier that this feature business is rather important. Features are things, are little components that you can enable or disable, basically. And the first one is WAS JMS Server 1.0. That instantiates the messaging engine runtime. So you have to have that if you want to have a messaging engine. If you want to do JMS, you have to have this turned on. The second one is WAS JMS Client. That provides client libraries and access to messaging resources through the JMS 1.1 API. The next one is the WAS JMS Client 2.0, which is for the JMS 2.0 API. That would be the recommended one. WAS Security 1.0 enables messaging engine to be secured. And JMS MDB 3.1 provides capabilities to configure and deploy MDBs written to the EJB 3.1 specification. And likewise, there is another one for 3.2. And the 3.2 is recommended rather than the 3.1. And if we move on to the next slide, please. There's going to be some more about that later on, about this 3.1, 3.2 thing. But first, let's talk about these individual features and how you turn them on. You turn them on in the server.xml file in the feature manager stanzas of the file. And the biggest one that you need to turn on is WAS JMS Server 1.0, and that enables the messaging engine. So you've got to have that, obviously. It provides runtime capabilities for the messaging server. It manages connections, persistence, transactions, security, and it allows the creation of destinations and managing authorization for messaging resources. And so to actually turn it on, in other words, the edit that you need to make to the server.xml file, you simply add the line that you see here in red in the feature manager stanza. So it's very easy to do. And you'll see that the other features are done the same way. So let's move on to slide 9, please. Okay, WAS JMS Client 1.1 feature provides applications with access to message queues hosted on the Web's free application server through the 1.1 JMS API, and it enables access to the messaging engine that's enabled through the WAS JMS server feature we just talked about. The messaging engine and the service integration bus that's hosted on a full profile server can also be accessed with this feature enabled. And the feature provides the definition of JMS resources and registers the objects in the repository. So in other words, when you install or enable this feature, that allows you to create connection factories, queue connection factories, topic connection factories, activation specifications, and then, of course, queues and topics. So these two components, the WAS server and the JMS client, are the two things you must have enabled if you want to do JMS. And looking at the bottom of this, that's how do you enable the JMS 1.1 client. Again, it's very simple. You go into the feature manager stanza and you add this line for this particular feature. So it's done exactly the same way as any other feature. It's very simple to actually turn it on. So let's move on to slide 10, please. Okay, this is the WAS JMS 2.0 client. This would be the preferred one because it has more features and it's up to the latest JMS specification, which is 2.0. And it provides applications with access to the message queues that are hosted in Web's free application server through the 2.0 API. It supersedes the 1.1 API. Almost everybody I know that uses JMS, by the way, is using 2.0. So if you're going to do this, this would be the preferred setting. It's compliant with 2.0 specifications, which is good, and it's supported only on JDK 7 or later. That's the one caveat with this. Make sure you've got the latest and greatest JVMs, JDK rather. And it enables access to the messaging engine enabled through the WAS JMS server feature we talked about before, and the messaging engine in the service integration bus that's hosted on a full profile server. So you can use this to connect to either the internal messaging engine in Liberty or an external messaging engine in full-blown WAS. And how do you enable this feature? Exactly the same way as before. The only difference here is the specification level. So you go into the feature manager stanzas and you add this line for WAS JMS 2.0, and that's it. It automatically becomes enabled. You don't have to restart anything, so it's very simple to do. And let's go to slide 11, please. Okay, a bit here about Liberty Security. There's several different levels, but in order to enable any of those, you've got to enable the WAS JMS Security 1.0 feature, and this enables the WebSphere embedded messaging server to authenticate and authorize access from JMS clients, just like bus security does in the regular WebSphere. And it does authentication, which validates if the user has permission to even connect to the messaging engine, and then authorization, which validates if the user has sufficient roles or permissions to access the messaging resources, such as queues and topics. And to enable it, here again, you go right into the feature manager stanzas, and you add this line for the WAS JMS Security 1.0 feature, and that's it. It's that simple. Very easy to do. Now, once this is enabled, let's move on to slide 12, please. Once this is enabled, you've got three different kinds of security you can turn on here. The first one is Quick Start Security, which supports only one user. That might be for a test scenario, I could imagine. The next one is Basic Registry, which supports multiple users and the declaration of user groups, so that's far more flexible. And then the last one is LDAP Registry, which allows connectivity to external LDAP registries because they no doubt require some sort of security. And you can see in the diagram here, On the left-hand side, you've got your messaging application that uses a connection factory through a JNDI lookup, and that's all normal. But then it accesses the client libraries, and that's where security is accessed or enabled. And so it's just a diagram to give you sort of a visual picture of this. And if we move on to slide 13, I'll show you how to set it up here. Okay. The first one, which was Quick Start Security, is very simple. You simply add a line in the server.xml file that says Quick Start Security, and then you specify a username and a user password. And that's all you have to do, really. And that should take effect pretty much immediately on the fly. And then you can encode the password. I don't know of anybody that's done this, but it's there if you want to, for a little tighter security. Then the next type of security is basic registry. And this is probably the one that most users are going to want to use, particularly in a production environment. And so for this, you add the following basic lines. And this is just an example, but you can kind of use this as a template for your own purposes. You add the basic security tag. You give it an ID and a realm name. And then here's the important bit here, is you can specify usernames and passwords. You can also specify a group name, such as admins, and then users under that group. So this is obviously a lot more flexible than just using a single user, and this is probably going to be the choice for most customers. And so let's move on to slide 14, please. Okay, for LDAP security, obviously this is going to be a little more complicated because LDAP has a lot of tags and name value pairs typically, and this is just an example. Use this as a template, although it's obvious when you're looking at something like this, if there's going to be a typo or something like that, some sort of syntax error, this is probably where it's going to happen. So if you can't connect to LDAP once you do this, this is obviously where to look because it's probably a typo or something like that. Okay, and all of this provides authorization, which is access to messaging resources, which is limited on based on roles and credentials. Only authenticated users will be authorized to access the resources, and unless specified, the default access is allow all. So in other words, if you don't do any of this, and you just leave all the security stuff out of the server.xml file, anybody can access any resource with any level of authority or permissions. So know that ahead of time. So if you want to secure your environment, you've got to add these. If you don't, you are totally insecure. So imagine if you had a messaging engine configured in server.xml, which you will if you're going to be doing JMS, and you have a look at it at the bottom of this slide. You add the following elements to the server XML file. Specify queue, specify topic space. This is just an example. And let's move on to slide 15, please. Okay, you can put security on these objects, in other words, the queues, topics, and so on. Here's an example. You can specify a message security tag, and you give it a role name, which is developer, which would be whatever role you want to be able to access this object. And then you give it the name of the object, in this case, Q1. And then just below that, you see two actions, send and browse. That tells you, or that specifies, what that user is allowed to do with that particular queue. So you could get very, very granular with this. And I don't know that anybody's done this. I haven't encountered anyone. But there's room for problems here because sometimes we do see customers in the larger WAS environments that set up queue permissions and authorizations that restrict them in certain ways, and they can't get certain things done. So when you're doing this, or if you do this, be very careful about what you set here. And the next example is topic permissions, same basic idea. In this case, the action is all, so presumably that would allow anybody to do anything as long as they were in the role name, the correct role name. And in this case, actually they specify a username and another username, user 1 and user 3, and a group name developers. So those are the only people that could do this, that could interact with this topic space and this topic name. So here again, you can get very granular. Just be careful about what you specify because you might. The typical situation is somebody does something like this, and they're tinkering with security, and they accidentally said something that disables their ability to do something else. So be careful with this. I haven't seen anybody do this, but it's there if you want to, and you can use this as a template. So let's move on to slide 16, please. Okay, JMS MDB 3.1 feature. This enables the use of JMS message-driven beans written to the EJB 3.1 specification. It allows asynchronous processing of messages within a Java EE component, which obviously is what MDBs are for. Supports both point-to-point and publish-subscribe messaging models, and the MDB can be configured within the web project itself, and we'll get to that in a little more detail here in a minute. Now, how do you enable the use of this feature so that you can use MDBs? If you want to use MDBs, you have to enable this. Well, just like all the other features, you add a line for this feature, and in this case, it's 3.1, and if we can move to the next slide, please, slide 17. There's also JMS MDB 3.2, and it's MDB 3.2 supersedes 3.1, and MDB 3.2 and JMS MDB 3.2 features provide identical functions. The only difference is the names. Between those two, MDB 3.2 is the preferred feature name, although in principle it shouldn't make a difference, but that's the preferred one. Now, this enables the use of message-driven beans in an J2EE environment with a 3.2 specification, which is slightly more advanced than 3.1. And MDBs allow asynchronous processing of messages, again. And how do we turn this on? Exactly the same way we do all the other features. We simply add a line to the feature manager stanza. In this case, it's JMS MDB-3.2. So nothing unusual there, nothing unexpected. So let's move on to slide 18, please. Okay. As I said before, you can do this by editing the server.xml. You can also do it using the Liberty Admin Center, which is a web-based graphical interface for deploying and monitoring and managing Liberty servers in standalone and collective environments. Now, to use this feature, to use this graphical user interface, you have to add the feature to the server.xml. So we see that here. We add the feature called admincenter-1.0. So that will allow us to start using this GUI. And you have to point to the URL where the GUI is going to access the GUI, basically, and that's what those subsequent tags are for. You can also enable Quick Start Security for this, with a user ID and password, and you can even do SSL stuff with this. So it's pretty flexible. Now, the thing is when Liberty starts, look in the console log, and you'll see a bunch of lines similar to what we see in this list of entries here. The important bit is the bottom line where in red where it gives a URL. That's the URL you're going to enter to start up the Liberty Admin Center. So you can do all this stuff GUI-based rather than editing the server.xml manually. Okay? So, moving on to slide 19. This is just a little screenshot to give you an idea of what the Admin Center looks like if you've never used it before. In my experience, most of my customers that I've worked with tend to edit the server.xml manually, but there's probably plenty using this. Now, keep in mind, the Admin Center is not JMS or messaging specific. There's a lot of stuff you can do in here. This is just a little taste of the JMS stuff that's available in here. And you should be able to do pretty much everything in here that you can do manually with the server.xml file, and this is what it looks like. Now, one thing I want you to notice is when you look at this screenshot, on the left-hand side in the upper left-hand corner, in that black horizontal stripe, it says server.xml, and then below that there's two tags or tabs. One is design, one is source. The one that says design is the one that's selected now. That gives you this GUI interface where you can enter things, and sort of similar to the admin console for a full-blown WebSphere. But to the right of that is source. If you click on that, that will allow you to edit the server.xml through this interface. So it's pretty flexible. You can do it either way. But just to let you know that it's there. But you're going to have to manually add this feature. It's not something that's automatically enabled. So if we can move to slide 20, please. Okay, MDB deployment. Deploying message-driven beans to connect to the embedded messaging server. In other words, the messaging engine that's running inside of Liberty itself. There's two different scenarios here. The first one is when both the MDB and the messaging engine are on the same Liberty server. And if you look off to the right, it's that part of the graphic that's at the top. You see the activation spec, the MDB and the messaging engine all running in the same server. The other scenario is when the MDB is connecting to a remote messaging engine that's running in a different Liberty server, and that's what that bottom part is. You see the MDB is there with the activation spec, but the messaging engine is on a different server. From an architecture standpoint, I will tell you, and most of you probably already know this, we generally like to segregate application servers from messaging servers, so that applications that do JMS are running on a certain set of servers and the messaging engines are running on their own servers. And we do this because it makes troubleshooting a little easier. It's a little easier to manage the environment. You don't have everything all crammed into one server, so there's a single point of failure. So if you're going to do this, my advice would be to use scenario 2 if you can, but scenario 1 is the easiest one to set up, just so you know. Okay, moving on to slide 21. Okay, the enable MDB feature. You have to do this if you want to use MDBs. In this case, the feature in Feature Manager that's specified is JMS MDB 3.1. Notice you also need the WAS JMS Client 2.0 feature there and the JNDI 1.0 feature. Okay, and you have an activation specification here. Now, this is how you do an activation specification in Liberty. Now, if you've ever done this in the WebSphere admin console for full-blown WebSphere, setting up an activation specification, if you just put the basic stuff in there, it's not so bad. But it can get a little complicated because there's a lot of features towards the bottom of the panel that get a little bit esoteric. And you don't really have that with Liberty. It's much more straightforward. And these features map to the features you see in the admin console with full-blown WebSphere. So the first one is the activation spec ID. Okay, and I'll get back to that in a second. So that's the name of this activation spec. And then the properties, you notice the bus name says default bus. If you are connecting to the messaging engine that's running in Liberty, the name of the bus is always default bus. It's never anything else. Okay? And then you specify a connection factory. Okay? In this case, it's Liberty or JMS/LibertyQCF. And a destination lookup, which is JMS/LibertyQ, which in other words, that's the part of this that's going to involve the actual queue where you send messages. And then a remote server address, in this case, localhost 7276 Bootstrap Basic Messaging. That is the same thing as the provider endpoint that you see in an activation spec in the WAS admin console. And notice localhost 7276 Bootstrap Basic Messaging, that is the default value. So if you leave blank, remote server address, if you just leave it blank, it's going to default to the value you see here. Okay, so you can specify it or not specify it. But if you don't specify it, then the MDB is going to try to connect to a local messaging engine in that server. Okay, if the messaging engine is running in a different server, in other words, scenario 2 that we just talked about, you're going to have to specify this, and you're going to have to make sure you've got the correct local or IP address or host name, port number, and Bootstrap Basic Messaging, unless you're using Bootstrap Secure Messaging, which is possible but not likely. So, one, that's the big thing about this remote server address. If you're splitting up your configuration where you've got apps on one server and the messaging engine on a different server, you need to be very careful about this field and make sure it's specified right. Okay, and then below that, we have the JMS queue ID, and you'll notice it's JMS/LibertyQ and then the JNDI name. This ID field, this JMS queue ID field, must be the same if you look above that where it says destination lookup in red. These two red fields, they must be the same value for this to work, okay? If they're not, then you're going to run into problems. And let's see here. If the ID, okay, the ID in the JMS queue field must match the destination lookup or destination reference property, but if the ID is missing, then the destination reference must match the JNDI name of the queue, which is to the right of the red ID field. So if JMS queue ID is missing, then the destination lookup must match the JNDI name that you see in the JMS queue line. So So that's a little tricky. Just the important bit here is make sure the destination lookup field, the value for that, is the same as the JMSQ ID field. As long as you do that, you'll keep it simple on yourself. But if you overlook something, then things get a little tricky. You can make it work, but you should have to start mapping to the JNDI name. So, having said all that, one other thing. This remote server address, I talk about connecting to a messaging engine in Liberty, but you can also set this to connect to a messaging engine in WebSphere application server. Okay, so a full-blown WebSphere application server. So don't forget about that. But this is most people use this setting or leave it blank and connect locally because they're not, you know, they don't have big sophisticated Liberty setups. They're usually very simple. But you can use this to connect to service integration bus on a big WebSphere application server if you want to. So let's move on to slide 22. Okay. You can use annotations with the activation specification. This is not required. And if you're not an MDB or EJB coder, you may not be familiar with this or too familiar with it, but you can use annotations in your code along with the activation specification config. This is an example. There's a good example in the Info Center. It's a little more complete than this. But what this does is it allows you a little more flexibility with your application stuff. I'm not aware of any customers that have done this, but it is there if you want it, if you're in the annotations and you want to use them. And so let's go on to slide 23, please. You can also use the EJB deployment descriptor file, IBM EJB char bind.xml. This is fairly common. In fact, lots and lots of customers use binding files for things. And so this option is available to you if you want to do that, if that's part of your business requirements that you do it this way. And the activation specification information from this server.xml file is what we just looked at. And if we go to slide 24, please. Yeah, here's the binding file that kind of maps to that. And the top part is the usual namespace and schema stuff. And the bottom part is message-driven name. That's the name of your message-driven bean. And then the JCA adapter activation spec binding name is this long string that you see here that ends with the bean name. And then the destination name that the bean is going to use is just below that. One important point here, this activation specification name that's the activation spec binding name that you see here, that is the application name slash package name slash bean name. And this is in the Liberty Info Center, but it has to be in that format. That's the only way the EJB container is going to be able to find the bean. So just keep that in mind. So again, it's application name, package name, slash bean name. But anyways, this is available to you. A lot of people use the bindings file, so that's fine. It's there if it's in keeping with your processes. And if we can move on to slide 25, please. And I believe this is where Gita will pick up from this point forward. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dai. Good morning, everyone. In this slide, we will discuss about interoperability between Liberty and WebSphere application server. The JMS applications that are deployed within Liberty can connect to the messaging engine that runs in WebSphere application server. Similarly, the JMS applications that are deployed within WebSphere application server can connect to the messaging engine that runs in Liberty. So in the below diagram, you can see the interoperability options for configuring your JMS applications to interact with Liberty messaging engine or the service integration bus in WebSphere application server. Moving to slide 26. Here we'll talk about enabling JMS applications on Liberty to connect to service integration bus. So the first step is to add the required feature. So in this case, the required feature is WAS JMS Client 2.0, or if you are using JMS 1.1 compliant features, then you can enable WAS JMS Client 1.0 feature. And then if your application is performing a JNDI lookup, then you can also add the JNDI 1.0 feature. So once you add all the features in the server.xml file, the next step is to add the definitions for the connection factory and destination. So for point-to-point domain, you should configure JMS Queue Connection Factory element. And within the Queue Connection Factory element, you can see various properties available. So the most important properties are the bus name. So since this application is connecting to the messaging engine and WebSphere application server, you should specify the name of the bus that exists in WebSphere. And then below that, you see the remote server address. That is where you specify the host name, port number, and the transport chain of the messaging engine that is running in WebSphere application server. And then in the target transport chain, you specify the transport chain. So if you don't specify anything, it defaults to inbound basic messaging. And if you want to establish an SSL connection to the remote messaging engine, then you use the inbound secure messaging transport chain. Similarly, you use the same transport chain in the remote server address. And once you configure the queue connection factory, the next step is to configure JMS queue element, where you specify the JNDI name for the queue. And within the JMS queue element, you set the name of the queue that is configured within the messaging engine element that you configure in server.xml. Moving to slide 27. For publish subscribe domain, you configure JMS topic connection factory and you specify the same properties that you do for JMS queue connection factory. And then you configure JMS topic and specify the JNDI name and the topic name for that specific destination. The important point to note here is that the remote server address, the host name that we specify here is the host name of the server where the messaging engine is running. In WebSphere application server, we normally specify the host name of the Bootstrap server. But in WebSphere Liberty, we should always be specifying the name of the server where the messaging engine is running. Moving to slide 28. So here we talk about enabling JMS applications on WebSphere application server and how they connect to Liberty messaging. Once you deploy the application onto WebSphere application server, within the application code, you specify the bus name and the provider endpoints. So here, one important point to note here is that it is not possible to perform a remote JNDI lookup from WebSphere application server. So you should use the JMS Factory class that is available in the SIB client jars. So once the jars are packaged and you can use this connection, JMS Factory class, and then set the provider endpoints and the bus name. And in the provider endpoints, you specify the host name, port number, and the transport chain of the messaging engine that is running in Liberty server. Slide 29. In this slide, we will discuss about various scenarios on where the applications are deployed and how these applications can connect to the messaging engine. The first scenario is an application that can run in Liberty profile that is hosting the messaging engine. Then we'll talk about the application that is running in Liberty profile that is not hosting the messaging engine. And next is the application that is deployed in full profile application server. And the last one is the application can be deployed in Liberty client container. Here, important point to note is that an application always connects directly to the messaging engine. Unlike in WebSphere application server, where like if you have a bus member as a cluster and where you have multiple messaging engines, an application can connect to messaging engine one and it can get messages from messaging engine 2 where the destination is actually localized. But in Liberty, the application always connects to the messaging engine directly. Moving to slide 30. The first step is to add the required features in the server.xml file. So the first feature is WAS JMS Server 1.0, which is required to run the messaging engine. And in order for the client to connect to the messaging engine, the next feature that is required is WAS JMS Client 2.0 or WAS JMS Client 1.0. And if the application is doing a JNDI lookup, then you should also add JNDI 1.0 feature. Once the features are configured, the next step is to add the destinations within the messaging engine element. So if your application is sending messages to a queue, you configure the queue element here. And if your application is using PubSub topology, then you configure the topic element within the messaging engine element. Moving to slide 31. Okay. By default, the messaging engine runs on port 7276 and 7286. So this 7276 is the non-SSL port and 7286 is the SSL port. So if you want to alter the default port settings, then you should add the VastJMS endpoint element in the server.xml file. And the next step is to configure the resources that are required for the application. First is the connection factory and then the destination. For point-to-point domain, you configure the JMS queue connection factory, where you specify the JNDI name and the remote server address of the messaging engine. And then you configure the JMS queue and specify the JNDI name and the actual queue name that is configured in the messaging engine element. Moving to slide 32. Similarly, for publish subscribe domain, you should configure JMS topic connection factory and specify all the required properties within this element. You can also use the remote server address property within this element and specify the host name, port number, and the transport chain. Then you configure the JMS topic and specify the JNDI name and the name for the topic. Moving to slide 33. Here we will discuss about deploying JMS applications to connect to the service integration bus running in WebSphere application server. So here we will need the feature VastJMS Client 1.0 or VastJMS Client 2.0 to connect to the messaging engine in WebSphere application server. And if the application is performing a JNDI lookup, then again you add the JNDI 1.0 feature. And then you add the definitions for the connection factory and the JMS destinations. For point-to-point domain, you configure JMS queue connection factory and specify the remote server address where you specify the host name, port number, and the transport chain. And you also specify the bus name, the name of the bus that exists in WebSphere application server. Slide 34. You configure JMS queue and specify the JNDI name and queue name. The queue name here is the one that you configure within the messaging engine element in server.xml. For publish subscribe domain, you configure the same settings. You configure JMS topic connection factory and JMS topic. Within the topic connection factory, you specify all the required properties. Important point is the remote server address. If the application is connecting remotely, then only you should specify remote server address. Otherwise, if the application is connecting locally to the Liberty messaging engine, then this property is not required. Then you configure JMS topic and specify the JNDI name and the topic name. Moving to slide 35. Finally, the last option for deploying an application is you can also deploy an application within a Liberty application client container. For this, the first step is to create a Liberty application client, and the way to do it is to run the command client create the name of your client, and once the command is successful, you will see a message something like the client created. And once the client is created, there will be a config file called client.xml, and this file will be created under Liberty install root / user / clients / client name directory. This is the file where all the configuration is done for the client. Moving to slide 36. So once the client is created, the next step is to update the server.xml file. Within the server.xml file, you should add feature app client support 1.0 feature. And then the other feature that is required is Java EE 7.0 feature. So once you add these features, you configure the required objects within the messaging engine element. If your application is publishing to a topic, you include the topic definitions within the messaging engine element. And if it is a queue, you specify the queue definitions within the messaging engine element. So these definitions, the queues, topics, queue connection factory, and topic connection factory, these can be configured either by editing the server.xml file or by using the Liberty Admin Center. So there are two options to configure these elements. Moving to slide 37. Once you update the server.xml file, the next step is to update the client and make all the necessary changes. So once you package the application, place the application in the client's app directory. So that should typically be under Liberty install root /user/clients/ the name of your client, and below that there will be a directory called apps, and that is where you place your application EAR, and then you update the client.xml file with the required features. So the feature that is required here is Java EE client 7.0, and then in the client.xml file you also add the application element where you specify the name of the application and the type of application, whether it is an EAR or if it is a WAR file, and also specify the location of your application. And then, if required, if you want your Liberty server to listen on a different auth port, then you can also alter the settings by including the element IIOP endpoint and specify the host name and port number that you want your main server to listen on. And similarly, if you are changing the settings on the server side, you do the same on the client side by adding an element called ORB, where you specify the name service, and within the name service, you specify the CORBA name, double colon host name, and then port number of the messaging engine that is running in WebSphere Liberty. If you don't specify any of these elements in the server.xml or client.xml, by default, both the client and server would be using localhost colon 2809. So this 2809 is the default port for the CORBA name server. Moving to slide 38. Once you're done with updating the client and server XML, the next step is to create the definitions for the resources. So the two resources that are required are the queue and the connection factory. So for publish, for point-to-point domain, you configure JMS queue connection factory and specify the JNDI name. Within the remote server address, you specify the host name, port number, and the transport chain. And if you have configured connection manager for the messaging engine, then that is what you see here. You can also specify the connection pool settings here. Then you configure JMS queue and you specify JNDI name and the queue name. This queue name is the queue that is configured within the messaging engine element. Similarly, for published subscribe domain, you configure JMS topic connection factory and JMS topic. And the rest of the properties are same as what you do for point-to-point domain, the name of the bus. If this application is connecting locally to the Liberty messaging engine, then the bus name should always be default bus. And the remote server address is optional. So if the application and the messaging engine are running on the same Liberty server, then remote server address is optional. But if you want your application within Liberty to establish a TCP/IP connection to the messaging engine, then you can use remote server address. Otherwise, if this property is not specified, then the application will use in-memory connection to establish a connection to the messaging engine. Then you configure JMS topic where you specify the JNDI name and topic name for the destination. Moving to slide 39. So the next step is to start the server by running the command server start, the name of your server. Then you run the client by running the command client run, the name of your client. So in the below image, you can see various messages that get logged when the above commands are executed successfully. So the important message is the one that you see, CWWKF0035I, where it says the client is running. So that is the message that gets logged when the client run is successful. Moving to slide 40. Message handling. So here we'll discuss about how the messages are handled in WebSphere Liberty. The destinations are always localized to the messaging engine where the destinations are defined. In WebSphere Liberty, since there is always only one messaging engine running, the destinations are always localized to that messaging engine. If we compare this with the scenario in WebSphere application server where the bus member is a cluster and there are multiple messaging engines within the cluster, and if you define a destination, then the destination is partitioned across all the messaging engines in the cluster. But in Liberty, the destination is localized to the same messaging engine because there is only one messaging engine running at any point of time. And if the application needs to send or receive messages to or from a destination, it must always connect to the messaging engine that localizes the destination. So if we compare again this with the scenario in WebSphere application server, in WebSphere, an application can connect to a local messaging engine and get messages from a messaging engine, remote messaging engine where the destination is localized. Or it can connect directly to the messaging engine where the destination is localized. So in WebSphere, there are two options, two ways on how the application connects to the messaging engine and gets the messages. But in Liberty, messaging, the application always connects to the same messaging engine where the destinations are localized. Slide 41. Monitoring. So here we will discuss about how the messaging engine within Liberty can be monitored. So for this, we use JConsole that is available within Java install folder bin directory. And the way to do it is to launch jconsole.exe from the bin directory. In WebSphere Liberty, there are four mbeans available for the messaging engine. The first one is messaging engine mbean. This is enabled by the WASJMS feature. So when you add WASJMS server 1.0 feature in the server.xml, that is when this mbean gets enabled. The next one is qmbean, and this is also enabled by WASJMS server 1.0 feature. The third one is subscriber mbean, which is used by the PubSub applications to connect to the messaging engine. The fourth one is topic mbean, and this is also enabled by the same feature, and this is used by the PubSub applications to get the statistics of the messaging resources. So once you launch the JConsole, it will connect to you can select the process, the Liberty process, and then establish a start a new connection on that process. Moving to slide 42. So here, how do you check the status of a messaging engine? So in the diagram, you can see the messaging engine mbean, and below the messaging engine mbean, there are various operations that are available on the messaging engine mbean. So to get the status of a messaging engine, you click on the state operation, and then it will display the current status of the messaging engine. Here in this case, the messaging engine is running, so you can see on the right side the status that is displayed. Again, the name of the interface that is used is messaging engine mbean, and the method that is that should be invoked is state. Moving to slide 43. How do you check the depth of a destination? It can be either a queue or a topic. So for this, you should use qmbean if you are using point-to-point topology, and you should use topic mbean for PubSub messaging topology. And the method name is getDepth. So in the image, you can see the operations that are available for this mbean. And on the right side, you can see the depth that is displayed for that specific destination. Moving to slide 44. How do you display the messages on a queue? So if you want to get a list of all the messages that are currently available on a queue or a topic, you can use the qmbean for point-to-point applications, and you can use the topic mbean for PubSub applications, and the method that is used for getting the list of messages on a queue is list queued messages. And in the image below, you can see how all the messages are displayed, and you can also see all the properties for each and every message. So if you click on the buttons that are available on the right side, you can see all the available messages and the properties for each and every message that is on the queue. Moving to slide 45. How do you generate a message stored dump? Message stored dump is typically required when you run into issues with like the messages not moving from the destination or messages piling up on the destination. So that is when support usually asks to collect message stored dumps. So for that, there is a way to generate message stored dumps in WebSphere Liberty. The interface that you should use is messaging engine MBN, and you should invoke dump method on the messaging engine MBN. Then it will generate a message stored dump within the server's log directory. An XML file will be created. Moving to slide 46. In this slide, we will talk about logging and trace, how tracing can be enabled. Primarily, there are three log files for a server. The first one is console.log file, and this contains the redirected standard output and standard error from the JVM process. The console output contains major events and errors if you use the default console log level configuration. It always contains the messages that are returned directly by the JVM process. This file is created if the server start command is used, and its location can be altered by using the log underscore dir environment variable. The next is the messages.log. This contains all messages except the trace messages that are written or captured by the logging component. All the messages that are written to this file contain additional information like the message timestamp and the ID of the thread that wrote the message. This file does not contain messages that are written directly by the JVM process. The third one is the trace.log. This contains all messages that are written or captured by the product. This file is created only if you enable additional trace. This does not contain messages that are written directly by the JVM process. And the way to enable tracing in WebSphere Liberty is by including the logging element in the server.xml, and within the logging element, you specify the trace specification using the trace specification property. And if you want to alter the settings for the trace file, you use the trace file name property, max file size, max files, and trace format if you want to alter any of the settings for the trace file. And once you enable the trace file, the trace files will be generated in the server's log directory. Moving to slide 47. So here we see what are the messages that get logged when you start a messaging engine with the default settings. So the one highlighted in blue, you can see those are the transport chain names. So if you don't alter the transport chain settings, then this is the name that is created for the transport chain. And by default, the messaging engine will be running on port 7276 and 7278. So the transport name for non-SSL port is WASJMS endpoint, and for SSL port is WASJMS endpoint SSL. So these are the default settings. And below that, you will see CWSIS1553I message and CWSIS1557I message. These messages provide information on the settings for the file store, permanent store, and temporary store settings. And finally, the CWSID0108I message that indicates the messaging engine has started. So once the messaging engine is successful, this is the message you see in the console dot, in the messages.log. Moving to slide 48. Suppose you alter the settings for the messaging engine, like size of the file store, or if you alter the port numbers for the messaging engine, then you will see the transport chain names something different. So if you the names that you see CWWKO02I9I in that message, you can see the one highlighted is the ID of the WASJMS endpoint. So if you want to alter the settings for the port, then you should use WASJMS endpoint element within the server.xml and provide an ID. So the ID that you specify within this element is the one that you see in the CWW messages highlighted below. So these are the settings you are seeing after the port settings are altered. Moving to slide 49. Okay, here you see the settings for the file store, permanent store, and temporary store file. These are the settings after the size of the file store was altered, and finally the CWSID 0108 time message indicating that the GMS server has started successfully. Moving to slide 50. The trace strings that are available in WebSphere application server, they are also applicable here in WebSphere Liberty. Depending on the type of the problem, you can enable appropriate tracing. So if you are running into issues with messaging engine startup, you can enable SIP processor and message to trace. And if you are having issues with messages piling up on the destination, then you can use the third trace string option. And for message-driven beans, you can enable message trace and SIP JMS RA trace. And if you are using a PubSub application, then you can enable the SIP match space and SIP processor trace. And if security is enabled, you can append the SIP security trace string to the third trace string. Slide 51. So here we have some references to Liberty JMS messaging. The first one points to the IBM Knowledge Center, and in the second link you will find instructions on setting up Liberty Admin Center. There is also a video available here, and in the third link there are instructions available on how to set up and use JConsole. Slide 52. So this is just a summary of what we have discussed so far. The first one is Liberty Messaging Architecture, where we discussed about various services available in Liberty Messaging. And then we talked about overview of Liberty Messaging, the various capabilities and the support for different messaging providers. Then we talked about all the Liberty Messaging features, where we also talked about Liberty Admin Center and how we can configure various resources from the Admin Center. Then we talked about deploying applications within Liberty and deploying applications in WebSphere application server, and what are the resources that are required to connect to the messaging engine. We also talked about deploying MDB applications and configuring all the required resources. And we also talked about message handling, how the messages are processed. And then we talked about monitoring, how the messaging engine and its resources can be monitored using JConsole and various MBeans. Finally, we talked about troubleshooting, what are the various trace strings that can be enabled within Liberty. And the various log files that are available. With this, I hand over to Kathy.
Well, thank you, Geeta and Ty, for this presentation. At this time, there are no more questions, so we will conclude the presentation. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Geeta and Ty, for presenting.
Thank you.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You all have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Yeah, you too.